Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle here. We discuss some real news. The end of an era and the start of another. Is there no red line Israel won't cross? And will NATO invite Ukraine into the alliance this upcoming July? Or will they just fudge it? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli, in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we cross to Martin Jay. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick this off with George in Budapest. I suppose it's kind of a moot point or just rhetorical now. Is there no red line Israel won't cross? Because we had the Biden administration come out feigning horror over the killing of the Western aid workers, stressing the word Western. But on the same day, shipments continued here. I mean, this has been a game of chicken, and George, Netanyahu has won.
Well, I'm afraid you're absolutely right, Peter. I think that Netanyahu has won. This has been going on since October, where Washington feigns outrage over some latest Israeli atrocity, the latest statistics about the civilian casualties, and then nothing changes. So this past week, we had these seven aid workers were Western. I mean, these were Western aid workers, particularly one of whom was a U.S. citizen. We've got three British citizens. And we had the attack on the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus. So these are both kind of fairly outrageous actions. And nothing really very much happens. You know, the same congressman issued denunciation, said no more aid for Netanyahu. Are you serious about that? Well, no more aid until Netanyahu gives a serious accounting as to what he's doing. And they'll write letters. And then in the meantime, in the UK, you've got David Cameron saying, well, this is really a very bad thing. Yes. You've got three British citizens are dead. And all you can do is just simply tut-tut and wave your fingers. And then in the meantime, you know, Boris Johnson says, we mustn't let anything stand in the way of more arms deliveries for Israel. So going back to your point, yeah, this can go on for a long time. Netanyahu is going to continue winning.
Well, Martin, the way I read it now in retrospect, this is just a very, very cynical game. I mean, if we go back from October to the present, I think George cataloged it well, is that, you know, there's this escalation of outrage and there's no limit. This is what has been proven. There is no limit. And we know that the defense ministry in Israel is angling for a possible conflict with Hezbollah. And of course, Iran is always on their radar here. And the administration just seems amazingly, disgustingly, pathetically impotent. You have Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State. I mean, I'm embarrassed when I see him now. He looks like an undertaker. He's always looking down. He's lying through his teeth. All the other administration spokespeople are no different, except for they excel in expressing a smirk when they're challenged. I mean, I've never seen this kind of look in my life. And considering the United States wants to be predominant around the world, constantly rules-based order, but when it comes to this one issue, they're impotent. Martin.
I don't know where to start.
George, I agree. I didn't even know how to start this program.
George brilliantly made all the points that I wanted to make. But I have to take to task both of you this idea that Netanyahu has won. I think it's too early to say, because quite rightly, George mentioned the tensions between Hezbollah and Israel, which are now really at a level that we couldn't have imagined just a few weeks ago. But in addition to that, the Israeli bombing of the Iranian consulate in Damascus, that's going over a line. And the situation now that Biden will have is, we hope he will have advisors around him and senior officials in the Pentagon advising him that if the Iranians go ahead with what they threaten to do, which is to strike Israel, then wisely, the Americans would be very wise to not get involved, to take a step back and say, we're not going to fire one missile. Because if you do fire one missile, if you launch one F-35 or one F-16 off those aircraft carriers, then you have a world war scenario. And is Biden going to go into his election role with a war with Iran, a war that no US president has ever wanted since 1979. They've all avoided like the plague. And, you know, we are now in a situation where we are talking about a war, and Iranians are not going to back down.
But, Martin, the cynicism is endless here because, for example, Israeli media and government officials are claiming, for rightly or wrongly, is that the Iran may strike Israel in response, which is exactly what Netanyahu wants, because that will force the Americans in. I mean, this level of cynicism, keep going.
Yeah, but I don't think they can't come in. It's just impossible. It's an impossible scenario, you know. And Biden would be completely off his trolley even to think.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Martin, but we watched Israel at the Al-Shifa hospital absolutely decimate it, turn it into ashes, and the world watched. A hospital. We're not talking about a military camp here, George. The cynicism is so thick; it's hard to see through it. I would contend the saber rattling with Hezbollah, the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, it's a diversion because they want to continue resolving and pursuing their genocidal policies in Gaza. That's the point.
Well, I think it may be a diversion, but it's much more likely a way of showing up Iran. I mean, I think what Israel is trying to do is to show the world, hey, Iran is a paper tiger, because Iran really doesn't want to get involved in the war with Israel, certainly doesn't want to get involved in a war in the United States.
And Lebanon certainly doesn't want to either.
Lebanon doesn't want to. And so therefore, it's essentially, what Israel has done is thrown down the gauntlet to Iran and said, okay, what are you going to do about it? We just hit your embassy compound. What are you going to do? Now, Iran is saying, we will do this, we will do that, and we'll do the other. But it's quite likely they're not going to do very much. I mean, we've seen in the past when Israel has conducted assassinations, well, it's assassinated its scientists, Iran basically sat back and watched. Because again, Iran doesn't want to get involved in a war with Israel, because of course that's a reckless thing, you know, that it brings in the United States. And even when the United States assassinated General Soleimani, a kind of a national hero, essentially, Iran was allowed to perform essentially a pro forma strike, just to save face. So the Americans said, all right, we'll give you one shot, hit our barracks, no one gets hurt, and then you can feel good about yourself that you were allowed at least to have
a pro forma strike. Your logic is impeccable as usual. But Martin, I certainly don't think Iran is going to have directly target Israel, though it has proxies galore. And I think that what we've seen is that Iran, presumably, reportedly, has told its proxies throughout the region to hold back. They have. Now there's no reason for them to hold back. And that's the fear of the United States, because you're going to be getting picked off all over the place. You know, where do you focus your attention? That is one. It's not as dramatic, George, you're right, as hitting a consulate. But the impact may be just as meaningful, Martin.
I think you're absolutely right. There will be more pressure on the proxies. There'll be more leeway, more flexibility, I think, for Hezbollah to even increase the intensity. And I said on your show a few weeks ago that I think there'll be some tactical strikes in the future. I still stand by that. I still think that we're waiting for the day where Hezbollah strikes an Israeli military organization, an institution, and kills a number of IDF soldiers. That's on the cards. I'm certain of that. But in the last few days, in the last few weeks, we've seen reports now of both sides talking now of a real war, a real full-on war, and that for the Israelis, but certainly for Hezbollah, will mean a land invasion of the northern strip of Israel. And I think that's a reality which is now edging closer and closer and closer. And you're quite right to talk about these thresholds that we've reached, you know, and how they don't shock people, and how people are becoming more and more fatigued. You know, we need to be more and more shocked, even to get our attention from media every day. You know, I was surprised that the aid workers, the seven dead aid workers, three of them Brits, got the attention that it did when you put it into contrast with the thousands and thousands of Palestinian babies, you know, that are killed every day in the most grotesque way, you know, in a way that our generation can only compare to the Holocaust. you know, those images, you know, they're not grainy anymore. They're graphic, they're razor sharp, you know, and HD. But I think that these thresholds now are being reached, and international law is becoming really a farce more than ever it could be. You know, international law was something that was very significant for American leaders, but not understood by the greater public. Obama pulled out soldiers from Iraq because of international law. He also didn't invade Syria in a big way because of international law. He cited international law. His advisors told him about international law. But I think international law is very much all about who's in the
White House. I would think it's quite selective. I mean, he did the destruction of Libya, okay? And previous administrations green-lighted the destruction.
And he created Guantanamo also, which is
George, I mean, I already mentioned the game of chicken here. He wants to get rid of Biden, doesn't he?
He does, that's another Netanyahu project that could actually come to fruition. Biden is very unpopular. He's got a really, really tough re-election fight on his hands. No one in the party likes
him. No one loves Joe Biden. Okay,
no, they don't. And he has a good shot that if Trump is in, Trump will be much more favorably inclined towards him than Biden has been. I mean, it's not a done deal, but there's a reasonable expectation. We have to accept the reality that Israel is a very serious country. Israel is ready to do whatever it needs to do to whatever goals it wants. Nothing is going to stop it. I mean, that's it. It's like, America's not going to stop us. International law is not going to stop us. United Nations is not going to stop us. We will do whatever we need to do. And that's really the problem when you come with Israel, is that there are no restraints. I mean, they say, well, the only important thing is that we survive, we prevail over
our enemy. Well, interestingly enough, George, there's a very perverse logic to this, because Israel will do whatever it wants. It's demonstrated that. But ultimately, the blame will fall on the United States and under the current administration, because that's how the world is going to look at it. And rightfully so, in many ways, it's a burden shifting, as it were. All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle here. We're discussing some real news. Martin, in July of this year, it's the 75th, was already passed, but they're going to have the big gala party of NATO's anniversary, 75th. And we have Secretary of State Blinken, which I refer to on this program as the Undertaker of international law. He was standing right next to the Ukrainian foreign minister and made it very clear, Ukraine will be part of NATO. Now, we heard this, under the George W. Bush administration. They're still saying it, though a lot of things have happened since. Are they going to induct Ukraine in July, or are they just going to fudge it one way or another? George and I have very strong feelings about this. You go first, Martin.
From a journalist's point of view, I think it's going to be a massive media fudge. I think there's going to be a lot of fake news. They've already prepared, and I think we should be prepared for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. With the conversation with the Ukrainian foreign minister, they hinted that they've been discussing and how to do this. I suppose it's how to fudge it. That's what they've been discussing, Martin.
Yeah, and I think the Ukrainians have been doing a very good job at fake news for an awful long time under the leadership of their American friends in Kiev, who always, wherever they go in the world, the Americans always build this center of disinformation. I've actually experienced it a lot myself in my own career. So we should expect a lot of fake news. But, what we should never forget is that the West is losing. And when you lose in a war, you lose ground, you lose territory, you lose villages and towns almost on a daily basis, and you become more and more desperate. Recently in the last week, I've seen video footage of 19 or 20-year-olds on a bus in Ukraine in uniform, looking as though they're being driven to their deaths. I mean, the look of just misery on their faces. Now, these can't be conscripts, because they've just changed the law in Ukraine. They've reduced the conscript age from 27 to 25, which the West hailed as a great step, a real progress.
Lindsey Graham certainly thinks so. A man doesn't have any children.
a man who doesn't have any children and has really, you know, half a bucket of water between his ears. I mean, he's a complete idiot. Total idiot. You know, and some of the things he comes out with are just astonishing. But, you know, I think to answer your question, we're going to see a lot of fake news. We're going to see a lot of, you know, euphoria about how well NATO has done and how it's keeping the peace. And now we're looking around the world for new members, you know, in South America and in Asia. But, you know, there is an underlying message here, which is that, you know, and I think it'll reflect very, very badly on Joe Biden. What will we remember Joe Biden for in years to come? Ukraine and Gaza, you know, and the horrific images that are coming from them. Because when Biden goes past his sell-by date and he starts, you know, getting his days of the week confused and the cities that he's in America confused and can't even walk off a stage, that's almost happening right now. Well, when we get to the end, when we reach November, December, you know, I think many Americans will just think that NATO and the West's role around the world in its defense strategy is a bit fake. It's a bit disingenuous because,
the good thing for Joe Biden is that he just probably won't remember it, but we'll have to do it ourselves. George, I mean, there's a lot of finessing you can do. You know, we've talked about this many, many times. Enforcing upon Russia a frozen conflict that's problematic in many ways. You have this create a new category for, you know, membership, just about, or, you know, all kinds of things like that. I think it will be verbal. I think it'll be rhetorical, but they're not giving up on this project. I think, you know, we have to make clear to our viewers, the West isn't giving up on this project yet, George.
No, I agree with you, Pete. I think you summed it up very well, that they may come up with some formula along those lines, which is a frozen conflict, maybe a kind of a two-tier membership. Yeah, you're in, but it's not. Don't quite have the status of everybody else. You know, maybe they'll think about, well, maybe we can create a demilitarized zone. The point is that this summit is now in 3 months' time, so it's coming up very shortly. And what NATO has made clear, because NATO has gone all in, and NATO made that decision, we're going to go all in on this, is we cannot afford to lose. There's no way we can lose, because if we lose here, then NATO is done. The post-Cold War world is done. And in fact, the results of the Cold War that will now be called into question of who really won that. So they can't do it. And that's why I think that the NATO powers, and particularly now the French, who are doing the most vehement shilling for NATO, that's why they're making clear, we're going to move our forces in. They don't mean we're going to be engaged in combat. They mean that we are actually going to be here and making clear to Russia that thus far and no further, you don't get to go any further east than where you are now, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but
I'm saying that's a.
Yeah, I know, but
I'm just saying that's their mentality.
That's really dicey, because Martin, there's been discussion coming up to the July summit, is that integrating more of Ukraine's military into NATO structures, which you can no longer say. I mean, it's been a farce for 2 years. But you know, we're not part of the conflict. Well, if you start integrating the military structures, then you are part of the conflict. And of course, Russia would not discriminate. I mean, they would see uniforms, they would see offensive material, and they would destroy it. This Macron's living in a fantasy world, but I repeat myself every program, Martin.
I think he is living in a fantasy world, but I also think, I don't believe that he will really send the troops there.
I don't either.
You know, I think he just bangs on this drum because it gets him media attention. It puts him into the center. It gives him this the idea that he can play this role temporarily, just for a day, of being the unelected president of the European Union, which is really his fantasy. You know, whenever he makes these huge statements, I always think of Ursula von der Leyen in Brussels and think, well, poor old bird. You know, she didn't get her media spot for the day. She was outranked by somebody who actually does get the media coverage. But it's only so long, it's only so far that he can carry on with that silly idea of presenting us with French troops in Ukraine. I mean, it's a joke, French troops. You know, can anyone remember the last time French troops actually won anything on a battlefield? I mean, come on. You know, I just see it as a disaster. And I think, I don't think Putin will hesitate. I think he'll shoot at them on the first day because he knows that all you need is a few body bags going back to Paris and the whole thing's over, game over. You know, this is the thing that people will not understand about NATO when we do these celebrations, which, by the way, have already started, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, I'm
celebrating. You know,
George, it was the last few days was the official birthday, right?
It was the official, the date of the actual signing of the Brussels Treaty. So that was the birthday, but this is going to be the birthday party. But I think so. Going back to Macron, I don't think they envisage their forces being in combat. And now the question is that what Martin said, well, Putin wouldn't hesitate to shoot at them, and I don't know. But I think the French want to work something out with the Russians so that you don't shoot at our forces. Yeah, we're going to be behind the lines. We're going to be doing logistics, administration, training, whatever. But don't shoot at them. I mean, this conversation that took place a few days ago between the Russian defense minister and the French defense minister, what were they talking about? Now, the French say, oh, we'll talk about terrorism. Well, why suddenly start talking about terrorism?
Well,
I think
sides.
The French wanted to get some kind of guarantees from Shoigu that when we deploy our forces, you don't shoot at us. And now, I don't think Shoigu gave them that guarantee, but I think that's almost certainly the reason why they suddenly had to have this conversation.
Look. Yeah, but I mean, it there's a lot of wrinkles there, Martin, because I mean, if you just mentioned these conscripts being a bus being driven to the meat grinder. And so if I were one of those guys and say, but the French get to stay in the cafes in Kiev and work, what about us? I mean, I don't think it's a good look, okay?
I think
first and foremost, we just do the fodder and the French guys can have cappuccino in a cafe. Go ahead.
We need to get real. You know, both sides denied these talks even took place, which I think is quite hilarious. That shows that neither one really has much confidence in pulling off any kind of deal, whether it's even informal, you know, back channel talks, etc. When was the last time Macron actually got a deal with Putin? When was the last time they both sat down at that huge table and agreed something? Never. You know, so I don't think Macron's going to do anything about getting a deal which, you know, manages to give an exemption on the battlefield to his French soldiers. I think that's preposterous. I can't imagine that ever happening. You know, but look, I think all of this, when we talk about the NATO birthday, going back to that point, you know, I think what the humble American in the blue collar worker in the shopping mall in Ohio is going to tell a journalist when asked about all this, because they don't really understand much, they're not expected to understand really anything of the bigger picture, is that NATO is this organization that we pump billions of dollars into. You know, we spend so much money on and we arm it to its teeth, but we don't have the leaders that have the courage to even put one.
Well, and I think also there's no real strategic vision. That's the problem here. George, with the July summit coming up, and you were asked, you know, tasked, you know, to make a cheerleading brochure for the party. What would it say?
He always gets the good questions.
cheerleading brochure. You would come up with the usual bung fluff that NATO has been coming up with. NATO has a huge, massive army of propagandists, also known as the mainstream media, telling them what a fantastic job it's doing. Obviously they're going to congratulate themselves on this job done. But I mean, when you talk about the strategic vision, there really is no strategic vision other than, well, let's go on, continue to bleed Russia.
Yeah.
That's all. Now, there's the question that should be asked, well, how does that benefit us? How does that benefit anyone in Europe? How does it benefit anyone in the United States? What do you gain by bleeding Russia? That they can't answer. So they just can say, well, we'll continue as before. And whatever else, we must prevent Donald Trump from coming to power because Trump might bring this spigot to an end. And this is kind of the absurdity. There is no strategic vision here other than, well, let's keep this going, because as long as this boondoggle keeps going, then we can go on expanding and go on acquiring more and more funds.
Yeah, Being humiliated in Ukraine shouldn't stop the alliance's march forward, okay, because it has some kind of world historic value. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here in RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.